So Pastor Michael would be the one who I think initially made connection with Aubrey. Okay. So, and I met her, like I got introduced to her once I started working here. Okay. And so I think that he may have first gotten connected. If it wasn't with her specifically, it was at least her office, but I want to say it was her. Back in 2017.
I thought he came in 2018.
He came in 2017. January. I think he moved, he and Miss Gail moved here in January of 2017. Okay. And so that summer there were heat waves. And Pastor Michael was trying to look for ways. Remember, everything for him was about stewardship. So it's like, how can we open this building up to the community? Because right now, mm-hmm. there's not, the church is kind of isolated from the community. There's not a lot of interaction. And so he thought, well, we have air conditioners. At that point it was just really the fellowship hall. It wasn't a lot of other places, but, we have air conditioners in here. We can buy bottled water. Why not make this a cooling center where people can get out of the heat? And so then I believe he had gotten connected with Aubrey's office like around that time. So then they were excited about, okay, we have this church who's interested in helping people interested in being a resource to people in this weather related issue, because that's what the Office of Sustainability is about, helping communities become resilient in the case and as a response to climate change and things that happen with the weather. So that was how we first got connected with them. And I want to say, and they may have even helped us get like bottled water to be able to pass out to people. So that was just kind of like I wouldn't say the relationship was very deep at that point in time. It was kind of just like, oh, there's this church and we can provide them some water and to give them some advice on how to do this, blah, blah. So it became a deep relationship after the 2018 flood. And it was at that point that this area became a disaster area, right? And there was literal recovery that had to happen here. And so, and Stone Meadow became the hub of that recovery effort. And that was when we really got deep rooted in ways with the Office of Sustainability, because we were then responding to a weather-related disaster, which is exactly what they do. And then at that point, it made sense to them because we were already acting as the hub of the recovery effort. It made sense to them for us to just become an official resiliency hub. And so that's when we decided to embark on that journey, and then they were able to. That's when Aubrey helped us get grants for that, and so with those grants came solar panels, energy efficient appliances, the lighting was changed all around the church. We got energy efficient lighting. Insulation. So they had a company come out and help insulate areas that where air might have been seeping out, and vice versa. And then that helped with the attic, because I think I told you the attic used to be this narrow little pathway where you walked, and if you stepped off of that, you would go through the floor and you would go and come down in the ceiling in the sanctuary. Yes. And so
in that process, did they they put the flooring
down? So they put the flooring down, yep. Okay. And so that's why we can walk pretty much everywhere up there now.
I think I got to see near the attic today.
Where did you see the attic?
No, the attic is huge upstairs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Wow. Yes. When y'all get a chance, Savannah can take you up there. And you can ask Frank, speaking of archiving, you can ask Frank about his experience of his leg going through the floor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Frank is going to be in the archive. Little Tina.
Look, maybe we shouldn't include that. That could potentially be a lawsuit. Thank the Lord, Frank was like... Frank was like, "Yeah, hey, I'm not gonna try to sue y'all or anything." that did happen. But so that helped with that, and then also then following, everything that happened with the flood, then we became. A hub once the pandemic hit. And so it was our connections with the Office of Sustainability who helped us, them and the Maryland Food Bank. But between them and the Maryland Food Bank, that was how we were able to up our supply of food in multiples. And so... And it was the Office of Sustainability helped us to get the produce. They helped us sign up for that program that brings the produce here. So then we were able to respond to people in need during the pandemic. And I want to say it was even them who helped us get connected with the Maryland National Guard, because there was a point in time in the height of the pandemic when we would have cars down the street, wrapping the corner, the line would be just that long to get into our parking lot because we were doing drive-through only. And so to get into our parking lot, we were serving, it was anywhere between 350 to 400 families, and it was a lot. So the Maryland National Guard helped us to man all the traffic and they helped us to, as we developed that into a well-oiled machine, that process of the drive-through, of the drive-through food distribution. So they helped in that way too. So they've been pretty helpful to us through the years.
Is BAM and the Office of Sustainability the same thing?
No. So BAM is our own, Steel Metal's own personal acronym for the four people that are our go-tos when we need something. Call one of them first. So B is Bonnie, Bonnie Sorak from Interfaith Partners of the Chesapeake. A is Aubrey Gurm. Are you typing this? So I should slow down and
as I'm saying this.
I have it down 2P.
So it's okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Morgan and McKay.
Yes.
Morgan is Delaware. Not the Forest Service.
Yes, Morgan Grove is the Forest Service, and McKay Jenkins is the University of Delaware professor. And Aubrey's last name is spelled Germ, but it's pronounced Germ. Oh, there's a need. We need to get something done. Bam. that's
awesome. And then, how did you meet Bonnie?
I want to say I initially met Bonnie because I don't remember how she and Pastor Michael met, but somewhere along the line, she and Pastor Michael met. Then he invited her to come to a church service where at the end of service, he talked about who she was. He, said that she's a guest with us today. We want to thank her for being here. And then she had a table set up at the back of the room with IPC you know, pamphlets and everything, what they do, information material. And so I want to say I initially met her that day, you know, as, and it really, but like, to be honest, I didn't have much interest in why she was there. Like, it didn't fully register, like, what her purpose of being there was. And so I want to say that I met her just from, you know, the typical thing you do as a church member. When somebody new comes to your church, you go greet them at the end of service and thank them for coming and stuff like that. And be nice. And so that was how I initially met her. And then when I got introduced more, you know, as a, like, officially, it was once I started working here. She was one of the first people that Pat, I would say, her, McKay, and Morgan, I met Aubrey too, but really, Bonnie and Morgan, Pastor Michael kind of put them with me as people who could help me navigate this journey of joining the Still Metal madness. It's not madness, it was all a plan, but you know, to join the Still Metal plan and start to implement the vision. So Bonnie really came alongside me, because Pastor Michael's first assignment to me was, I started working, so my hire date is September 14th of 2020, but I started off with 2 weeks of paid vacation, so I didn't actually start. Yes. I didn't actually start until September 28th of 2020. So the Pastor Michael had been going around town, you know, telling everybody and building these partnerships, because we have a peace park. But our peace park, you know, we had done some things in it, but it was still rough, very rough. Around the edges. And so, but his thing, Pastor Michael's philosophy is ready, aim, shoot. And I'm sorry, ready, shoot, aim. Is that right? Yes, ready, shoot, aim. So he's like, you do stuff and then you can always edit as you go along. But the hard thing is to get started. So just start, just do it. And then edit as you go. So that's how it was with the peace park. That, yes, this thing looks wild and crazy, but we have a peace park, and we're going to open it up to our community, and we'll edit it as we go. And so in October of 2020, that was when he was like, we're launching a grand opening for this peace park. So my first assignment with Still Metal was to, I mean, as my job here, my first major thing was plan the Peace Park anniversary. So, and so, mind you, so my first day was September 28th. The Peace Park anniversary was October 24th. So, go. So, and so he connected me with, you know, he told me to talk to Kim Cruz, one of our church members who had been, you know, doing things with the food distribution and everything. And then she's also a person who is planning activities around here, events and stuff. And so he was like, you know, Kim and I have already talked about some of this, so get with Kim and you know, develop who's going to do what and go. And he said, and Bonnie, consult Bonnie, because he was like, let's do a press release. Okay, so I don't know anything about press releases. All I know is the word press release. Like, I don't know how to do this. How do you get them with the press or anything? I don't know. And so he said, you know, Bonnie should be able to walk you through that. So Bonnie walked me through that process, and she helped, you know, connect me with some other organizations that we could invite to come to the Peace Park grand opening and all of that. So it helped me get the word out and all that good stuff. So that was how I really started to get to know Bonnie, and she walked me through a lot of those, and still has walked with me through this stage, because her part of the connection there, and I think I explained this to you some, Savannah, that through Blue Water Baltimore has a grant that they applied for with the National Fish and Wildlife Federation, and or is it Foundation? National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, National Fish and Wildlife Federation. I think it's Foundation. Yes, Foundation. So, in that grant, they included Still Meadow as a sub-recipient so that Blue Water Baltimore would get paid out the money that, you know, that they asked for in that grant. But part of that money would go towards a few different organizations, Still Meadow being one of them. And so the money that was going to come to Still Meadow, the bulk of it was going to be to hire a person who could coordinate these environmental stewardship efforts, you know, help with outreach, help with planning and implementation and just all of that. And so, because Pastor Michael, you know, he's like, yes, we want to do it, but I can't do it. I'm the pastor in the church. And so, so that's where of the bulk of the funding to actually hire me came from. So Bonnie is her organization is also a sub-recipient in that grant, and her organization and Blue Water Baltimore work closely together anyway with what their interests are. It's in lockstep with each other. And so with being able to meet the deliverables for our end of receiving that grant, Bonnie meets with me. We meet every other week where we just talk, and we, you know, she helps me keep track of like what my deliverables are and when, you know, planning things to make sure that I'm accomplishing those things. And so, so she's, like I said, she's walking me through from the beginning for all of that. So she's been like an unofficial trainer in a way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll get back to the partners in a little bit. But then question about church history is, what memories do you have from your time when the church was housed in the YMCA, and how old were you then?
So we got here in 89, so I would have been, depending on, I don't know when, like what month of the year that was. So if it was before or after my birthday, then I would have been, if it was before my birthday, I would have been 8. If it was after my birthday, I would have been 9. My birthday is in August, so I don't know what, if Mr. Rich was able to give a month.
Gotcha.
So then when we were in the YMCA, we were doing that for a few years. So I would have been anywhere between like 6, 7, 8, 8-ish, something like that. My memories of the YMCA is, you know, there's not a ton because I was so young. But I do remember like there being a big room, like a meeting room. That was there, that we would have to set the chairs out. You know, I mean, I didn't know about this part, but but the church, the members would, you know, the adults would set the chairs out before we started our service. And then this part I remember, like, and trying to be helpful, is then after service we would have to put the stack the chairs back and put them off to the side. And so I remember, like, I guess so-called trying to be helpful in that. And so and I remember, I definitely have a memory of my brothers, my two older brothers, and then two of my cousins who decided to get baptized. They were teenagers during that time. And so, they decided they wanted to be baptized. And so, Pastor Freeman, Joel Freeman, who was our pastor at the time, so he was the first pastor of Still Meadow. And so he was our pastor when we were at the YMCA. So he baptized them in the YMCA pool at the YMCA. And I remember that. I remember he was really good with connecting with the teens. And so, like, I remember him taking my two older brothers to, like, oh, because he was the chaplain for the Washington Bullets at that point. He was a chaplain for the Washington Bullets, which is now the Washington Wizards, the NBA team. And so he would take my brothers to games with him because he got free tickets. He was the chaplain. And so, like, I remember him taking them places, or, like, even, like, I think they might have gone on a ski trip or something like that. Like, I remember them going, but I was too young to go. Me and my younger brother were too young to go. But I remember that being cool, like, to see him interacting with them, and that being a really cool, special thing. And then being in, and then just, like, different little memories here and there of, like, being in Sunday school class and stuff like that.
Are you still in contact with some of the folks you knew from, like, the YMCA church?
So I would say Mr. Rich. We still in contact with him. And then I don't talk as much, I don't talk so much to Pastor Freeman, only because, you know, just not, like, no reason. It's just, yeah. You know, people drift through the years. But my mother, he and my mother are still in contact. Mm-hmm. So, and we had a event here. I think Pastor Michael, when he first came here, we had, like, an installation service for him coming on as the pastor. Pastor Freeman came to that installation service. So, like, that was the first time I had seen him in years. But, and that was the first time my mother had seen him in a long time, too. But she'd seen him, you know, more frequently through the years than I have. And, like I said, they are in contact. So, so there's that connection is still around.
Do you know why Pastor Freeman, like, left? Did he retire or the new church? Like, is he still in the area?
He is... I think he still lives in Maryland. I have to ask my mother to make sure. But I think he still lives in Maryland. And so this is the part of where, you know, being a kid, you only know bits and pieces of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I never went back and, I guess, was like, hey, somebody tell me the real, what was going on behind the scenes. But what I do know is that he and his wife got a divorce. And so then he had to step down from being a pastor when they divorced.
Gotcha.
And I think once he stepped down from being a pastor, I want to say he left here. His wife stayed for a long time, but he stopped attending.
Mm. Is that, like, a denomination thing or, like, a church-specific thing? Like, is that something in the EFCA denomination that if you're divorced, you can't pastor a church?
So, at that point in time, when we started, we were a non-denominational church. So, we weren't affiliated with the EFCA.
Yeah.
So I guess that's another thing from my childhood. I remember being a non-denominational church. Like, I remember saying that to people when they were, like, being a kid, and people being like, what church you go to? And I tell them. And it was Still Metal Christian Church, I think, back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was Still Metal Christian Church. And so, and people being like, well, you know, some of my friends being like, well, is that Baptist? And I remember being like, it's non-denominational. And then the other kids being like, what does that mean? And I'm like, we're non-denominational. Yeah. I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
I just know we're non-denominational. And so, at that point in time, like, in terms of the timeline, is fuzzy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were involved in the EFCA at that point in time or not, I don't think we were.
Gotcha.
I think we were still an independent, non-denominational church. So, in which case, it would have been church policy that, like, you know, if you're... I remember, I think my mother explained it in the sense that, like, you know, because... he's going through a lot of changes in his family. Mm-hmm. He needs to step down and like take care of. That was how that she kind of explained sense. It to yeah. me as a kid, right? Because mm-hmm. we like, why is Pastor Franklin leaving? Mm-hmm. And so, so yeah, that he needed to step down and take care of his family issues.